welcome to this month's look at the international medical headlines from Johns Hopkins. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Mike Clagg, Dean of the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins.
And Mike, we are so privileged to have with us today Amy Choi. You and I and Amy, we were just in Addis Ababa, Africa, for the International Family Planning Conference, and it was quite an event. We're so privileged, Amy. Thanks for joining us.
Not at all. Happy to be here.
I'd like you both to address the noteworthy things you observed at the conference in Addis. So we'll start with you, Amy, because you did an awful lot of work getting this conference off the ground. It was fabulous. Lots of people attending. What did you notice that you thought was different?
I was particularly pleased with the quality of the technical presentations and the sessions that were co-organized with our co-chair, Dr. Michael Mbizo, who recently stepped down from his position at WHO. We had something like 700 some presentations there that were all peer-reviewed, and I think the quality really improved this time.
Mike?
I was bowled over by the conference, and this is the third one that's happened under Amy's leadership as the director of the Gates Institute for Reproductive Health. When we had our first one 5 years ago, international family planning had sort of fallen off the agenda. People weren't talking about it. The community of people who had trained and were doing it were really scattered to other areas. So the first one in Kampala, it had tremendous excitement about bringing people back together. This one now, the third one, the enthusiasm and the sense of community people brought to this important issue. And the two things I found different than in the previous ones were more of an emphasis on access to reproductive health care as a human right. And the other was the importance of youth and adolescence as a time when we need to intervene in helping young people make healthy choices.
Amy, when you embroider on those observations of Mike, would you take us back just slightly and give us a little bit of an historical perspective on the previous two conferences and what they look like from a scientific standpoint and how we're moving now?
The very first one was in 2009, and I have to thank Mike Clagg for being at all three conferences. The show of Hopkins leadership is so important for the rest of the world. The 2009 conference was held in Kampala. It had about 1,200 people, and it really was, as Mike said, it was a convening. People were very happy to get back on topic. We had been muted for quite a while politically in the United States. The second one was in Dakar. And there has been hardly any conversation or much movement on the topic of contraceptive access. There we had 2,200, and again, there was a palpable feeling of excitement. But in Addis, we didn't expect that we would have 3,500 people there, and they all appeared despite a lot of challenges of getting in and out of the conference center and so on. So historically, I think we're seeing, at least for the sub-Saharan African continent, not only this sort of embracing of contraception as a appropriate technology and behavior for their populations, but also evidence of success. I mean, we're seeing doubling of contraceptive prevalence rates in a number of countries like Rwanda and Malawi and Ethiopia and Senegal.
Seems to me that we're seeing a lot of governments also taking this up as a really important issue.
Well, I think that's been one of the successes of the Gates Institute is creating the evidence so that governments can make an informed choice about contraceptive use and documenting the need. We know now that there are over 220 million women in stable relationships who say they want access to family planning methods to either limit or space births who don't have it. That's a lot of women.
And an awful lot of maternal and infant mortality, too, that represents.
Yes. I mean, last summer, July 2012, one of our colleagues, Saifuddin Ahmed, who's a professor here, published an article in The Lancet that showed that the prevention of maternal deaths could be as much as 66% with the presence of contraceptive use. That is over a 20-year period.
Certainly, we have a number of contraceptive options. Would you please describe the ones that are the most important right now and how that's changing?
In the low-income settings, particularly sub-Saharan Africa, the method that is the most popular is the contraceptive injectable. Gradually, we're seeing increases in implant use. And part of that is because you can use these methods discreetly without anybody really knowing. And in particular, a number of women worry about their husbands knowing. So those, at least, are the two methods that are very important in sub-Saharan Africa. For the rest of the world, where most of the population is, it's sterilization and IUDs, surprisingly. In the high-income countries, in fact, there's a lot of use of condoms, vasectomy, and the pill. And so we have a really very diverse composition of method use around the world.
Why is it important to preserve those choices?
Ah, because there's no one method that will work for you throughout your life. When you start young, you'll want to use something like emergency contraception if you're sexually active. And as you get older and you perhaps don't want to deal with a daily regimen of using something, you might offer a long-acting method.
Mike, you identified one of the emerging trends from this conference as the involvement of youth in this whole movement forward in the promulgation of choice. Tell me more about that.
So adolescents are at the cusp of adulthood. They're forming behavioral patterns that are going to be important throughout adulthood. Very few societies do a good job of communicating what adolescents need to know. What are the risks? What are the options? And then understanding how they're thinking so you can wrap the message in an envelope that's going to be acceptable to them.
And so, Amy, how are we going to achieve this with regard to family planning?
So the good news is that at the conference, not only were there 350 youth, but many of them had competed to be there. And the call was put out for youth to submit YouTube videos. So we had 140 submit YouTube videos. And when I watched them, I was blown away. I said, we can't let this talent go unaddressed. So we ended up supporting at least 20, and I'm sure other people ended up supporting many more, including the Packard Foundation, which had a pre-conference program on youth.
So what were their ideas about how they like to be engaged and how they're going to be able to get this message out to their peers?
I think they really were hungry for information. And it's as Dean Clagg says, we aren't very good at communicating and informing them. But they were very hungry for information about their contraceptive options. They were very hungry for information about how they could access and how they themselves could help define their own future in this regard, how they could shape programs.
How much political turmoil is empowering youth likely to cause in places like sub-Saharan Africa?
Well, I think we have to be respectful wherever we work of the mores and the culture of a society. But what we see in some societies in sub-Saharan Africa is an incredible prevalence of child marriage. Girls as young as 11 and 12 being married. Girls who are not physiologically ready for intercourse or for childbirth. So the first step is just identifying the data that define the problem, define what the issues are. Once you raise awareness, to reaching joint solutions about how you deal with the problems. So we would never impose or tell a society what to do, but what we really are good at is creating evidence. And then once you create evidence, then leaders and civil society come together to work out joint solutions.
Outstanding. Amy, I'm sorry to say that you're going to be stepping down in your role as the director of the Gates Center here at Johns Hopkins. What do you think is going to happen at the next family planning conference? What directions do you see emerging on the horizon?
I'm looking forward to new vistas in the coming years where I can devote more time to generating the evidence for family planning. In terms of the future, one of the things that I observed at this conference was I felt very clearly it belonged to everybody. It was no longer a Gates Institute initiative. The ministers were there. The prime minister was there. It was clearly a conference that belonged to the conferees. And so I think that's a very good sign that going forward, they will attend and they will find the relevance of that platform. There were so many side meetings that were organized that it's just this platform now that helps galvanize the community.
What would you like to add, Mike?
I would just say that the deputy director of the Gates Institute, Ouying Ramon, is the person who led and organized this conference. And I think he understands advocacy and how to bring thought leaders and political leaders and social leaders together better than anyone. That transition that Amy mentioned was clearly there, and Ouying was the perfect person to lead this meeting.
We owe him a great debt for what he did with this conference.
Excellent. So that's a look at this month's International Medical Headlines from Johns Hopkins. I'm Elizabeth Tracy. Thanks for joining us, Amy.
And I'm Mike Clagg, Dean of the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, where our motto is protecting health, saving lives, millions at a time.